inner hall of life.
Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, feminist, pansexual ho living in New York City. This week, we have a very special live show for you all. We had three sexual health educators join us to talk about how to ho safely, specifically amongst queer, black, femme, and trans populations. It all went down at the Not Yet Sex Positivity Showcase this past weekend, and shout out to Not Yet for hosting us. It was such a great show, and I can't wait for all of you to hear it. But before that, what are you doing right now? I'm sorry to be a fuckboy, but if you're listening to this on Wednesday, November 21st, you might just be sitting around. You're not going to work tomorrow because the colonizers declared tomorrow a holiday. You're trying to have some fun before wholesome family time tomorrow or before the toxic ass time spent with your uncle, either or, I don't know. But if you're in New York City around 7 p.m., I want you to stop by Love Story Bar on the border of Ridgewood and Bushwick. Your homies Inner Ho Uprising are going to be there for Drinksgiving. So entry is free, but you can also participate in the 2-hour open bar special for $20, and that includes well drinks and beers on tap. Reminder that Love Story uses 2 ounces of liquor in their drinks as opposed to 1, so make sure to drink in moderation. And if anyone, anywhere, at any moment is making you feel unsafe, go to the bar and order a shot of cold milk and they'll know exactly what you're talking about. Or come to me, Akua, Rodicky. You can look at the cover art to know what we look like, or you can look at our Instagrams to know what we look like, and let us know and we'll shut whatever the hell is happening down. So no fuck shit. There's gonna be board games, giant Jenga, video games, music, all by DJ Abner Luna. It's going to be a fun time. So if you're coming through, we will see you this evening. But if you can't make that, try to make it to our sex trivia night on December 2nd. So every first Sunday of the month, Inner Ho Uprising is hosting sex trivia night, also at Love Story Bar. So we want you to come, drink, play, win a prize, and if you're any good, you can go home and come again, hopefully with your newly won toy, because we're giving out prizes, baby. So come kick it with us for a real chill time before you get thrown back into the thick of capitalism that Monday morning, December 3rd. This is free 99, just come through. It's going to be a chill time. More information for that in the description of this episode. And now let's get into our live show. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. All right. Ooh,
hello, hello, beautiful people. Y'all don't say hi? Okay, cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Did everybody enjoy like the collage making workshop? Who danced?
Y'all was fucking it up.
Yes,
y'all
was getting it. We saw y'all. Who wants to like bust it wide open again?
Yeah.
No?
They all got that part. Yeah, like they exactly. were ready. They were like, pop, pop. Nah, I'm not too sure, but I could spread it. I see y'all.
Spread. Y'all ready for a live show? Cool.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising,
the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist ho living in New York City.
And me, Akua, one intersectional feminist who specializes in all things mental health and all things care for you, black girl.
And has some bomb-ass lashes.
Cool. We're done. Bye, Sam.
Thank you. Cicinos.
This is my personal makeup artist right here.
Non-consenting. I don't want to do it. She forces she does. Me.
She I'm just like, I'm showing up with the shits. Be ready. She's like, it's 9 a.m. I said,
I'm not your workhorse. All right. So, of course, this is a live interview episode, and we'll be talking about the intersections of sexual health with three guests, and specifically about sexual health and hoeing as women, as trans folks, as queer folks, as people of color, or as QTPOX, if you want to abbreviate the shits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
If you guys want to follow along with the conversation had today, you can do so using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it. The hashtag pod in so other people in the podcast community can see it.
And live because it's a live show.
Oh, true. Shout out to Barry. And then our newly created hashtag Not Yet Sex so that the people of the Not Yet series can follow along and share this as well.
Woo!
All right. Shout out to Paige for hosting
all right,
us today.
So we didn't give you those paddles because we saw the daddy in you, although we do see the daddy in all of you. But this is for a very special game that we're going to kick it off with. And it's a trivia game specifically related to STIs and sexual health, because that's what we're talking about here today.
Yep. rules. Let's get some rules. We'll ask the question. They are true and false based.
So first, STIs are spread through penetrative sex alone. True? False?
Oh, y'all are smart. Y'all some smart people. So it's false because such STDs such as crabs or pubic lice, HPV can be spread through genital contact without penetration. So you can still get these things without penetrative sex.
Cool. Next, you want to read that one?
Negative test result means that you are in the clear. Is that true? And that is false. Some viral infections, including HPV, hepatitis B, hepatitis A, HIV, can take 3 to 6 months to produce a positive result. So you would need to get tested multiple times after a potential exposure.
Those who practice non-monogamy and polyamory have higher risks for STIs. Cool.
It is actually true. And this comes from the CDC.
So
the statistics comes from the CDC, which I feel has a heteronormative bias to it. But those with multiple sex partners are at higher risk for STIs and STDs, with the caveat that I would like to say if they're not practicing safe sex.
Probability-wise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
STDs have immunizations, like vaccines. That is true.
True.
Yeah. You can be vaccinated for hepatitis A and B and certain strains of HPV, but it does not guarantee it's not a cure,
yeah,
first and foremost,
cure.
But it doesn't guarantee that you'll be protected against all strains of, like, HPV, for example. Two more?
Yes. Cool. Number 7 is my favorite. Pulling out prevents STIs. True or false? True.
How about we wish? No.
I'm glad that y'all know that pulling out does not prevent shit. Nothing. Not a goddamn thing.
I have a follow-up. What about just the tip? No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to throw my mic at you. Just the tip doesn't do nothing for nobody either. Okay. Whew, that triggered me a bit. It took me back to a poor, poor time in my life. I fell for that and ended up with a whole child. So let's not go there.
All right, last one. There is a belief that sex with a virgin can cure STIs. True? Not the myth. The fact that there is a myth. Okay, false. Talk about it.
So there is a belief that sex with a virgin can cure STIs. That is a myth. That is not true. No, sex with a virgin will not cure you of any sexually transmissible or transmitted disease.
It's rooted in rape culture.
It's rooted in rape culture.
It's raised some fucked up shit.
And the myth of virginity.
Yes, and the myth of virginity. True. Good point. Y'all ready to start a show? Good job, everybody.
Yes. Y'all some educated
Clap
folks.
For yourselves. Very smart folks in the room. All right, so we're going to introduce our first guest.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Alex, pronouns he and him. Him, not him. He has Jamaican pronouns.
That's why I pronounce.
So Alex is a gay, cisgender male and self-proclaimed thought, that stands for that hoe over there, who has experienced...
That hoe over there. Right there. Right there.
Who has experience working in HIV and STI education and prevention in direct community-targeted testing, counseling, street outreach, education, and prevention programs, national consulting. Let's bring out Alex.
Alex.
You can sit right there in the middle
between these two lovely hoes.
I'm very excited to be here.
Yes.
And thank you for this alkaline water. That's very nice.
What is alkaline water?
I don't really know, but I know it's good for you.
He said alkaline. I thought of the Jamaican artist. He has his own brand of water. So we're talking about STI, STDs, and later on prevention. What is the difference, if any, between STI and STD, the acronyms?
Oh, they're just, it's the same. It means the same thing. Like, it's just infection is like a little less stigmatizing than disease. So the language has changed over the course of the past few years from STD to STI, mm-hmm. just because it's like, it seems like more manageable, which most of them are. It just makes it like frames it as something that's curable or manageable. Mm-hmm. STD is still used. You can use either one, but STI is like the more preferred and like less stigmatized
Now, I heard a distinction that STI would be acknowledging the infection, whereas STD is a disease that comes from after the infection. So, like, chlamydia then turning into pelvic inflammatory disease.
Fair. Okay, yeah. That's a really good point. And if you want to frame it like that, like, hopefully chlamydia doesn't turn into pelvic inflammatory mm-hmm. disease, which is why it's important to get tested and treated, mm-hmm. And to wait to have sex after you're treated. Because otherwise, it's just going to turn into the gift that keeps on giving. Ooh. But
it may be Christmas, maybe the holiday times.
That's a fair point. Pelvic inflammatory disease is caused by an STI, and it is more sort of a disease. But like any disease can be like termed as an infection. Because that's kind of the verb that you use when you acquire it.
Mm-hmm. Can we skip forward to waiting? Can we skip forward?
Yeah.
Okay. So you just said the fact that you would wait. Yeah. To have sex, how long would you have to wait?
Okay, so most, after an STI treatment, like something like gonorrhea or chlamydia, is going to be about a week after the antibiotic treatment that you begin. Sometimes you get treated same day. It's just like depends on, like chlamydia, there's two ways to treat. You could treat it with like 1 gram of azithromycin, and that's just one day, and then you wait a week. Some people prescribe like a course of like doxycycline, which is like twice a day for 7 days. And after a week, your body's cleared it, and you don't really have a risk of infecting someone else or like reinfecting yourself if you have sex with that person again. So that's why it's important to wait a week. Syphilis is like a little bit more complicated. You definitely, after treatment, like you have to wait a little bit longer because you have to get your blood tested again to make sure that the treatment was effective. So that could take up to like 3-4 weeks. But it's just like generally important to make sure that you're waiting to make sure it's gone before you start, you know, using those parts again.
Is it only with syphilis that you have to be retested?
It's recommended that you get retested for like everything, just to make sure that the treatment was effective. There's a lot going on about antibiotic resistance gonorrhea. I don't know if y'all have heard much about
it. They call it like super gonorrhea.
Yeah, super gonorrhea. Some people like that nickname. It's not a superhero. It's not going to save you.
Like
but
scary
it, is,
as shit.
It is. It's less of a mouthful than antibiotic resistant. But like, you know, it's something that's been around for a while. It's like, I think a lot of the articles, it's important that we know about it, but it's not like it's never going to be curable. It's just like more difficult to treat. But a lot of times when things happen, you know, the media just like wants to get attention and make people nervous. So
this isn't promoting risky behavior, but you said that there's a chance of not reinfecting yourself if you have sex with the same person who you contracted it from. So if you get treated, and this is just pure curiosity, this is not helping anybody, but if you if you get treated and do your antibiotic regimen and then have sex with the same person who's not been treated,
you're gonna get it back.
You're gonna get
it back for sure.
Oh, okay.
It's not
so
like
don't
one of those.
Do that.
Oh, you can get that as many times as you know. You
it's the gift that have keeps on giving.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Cool. So what are the most common kinds of STIs right now?
So chlamydia and gonorrhea are two of the most common. There's one that's actually in some places more common than gonorrhea that people don't talk about because people don't know about it. It's called Mycoplasma genitalium. And a lot of tests don't test for it. So you need like a super, right? No, I know y'all never heard of that before. I didn't hear about it. I didn't hear what it was until like I was like, I need to get tested for this. It is still easy to treat. The antibiotics are a little more like heavy hitters. It's a little bit more common than gonorrhea. It's like other STIs, it's linked to HIV transmission as well. And like affects people living with HIV more severely, like most STIs do. If you are, you know, if you have something going on and you end up getting tested and it's not, you know, the common things that they would test for, you would request what you would call a miscellaneous reference test from whatever like lab that you're getting tested at. And 9 times out of 10, the people at the lab not going to know what the hell you're talking about. But like if you like walk through it and like ask for the lab manager or like whoever's in charge, somebody will know. Yeah. And syphilis Syphilis actually has been making quite a strong and steady comeback since like 2012. And it's like just crazy right now, especially for men who are having sex with men, cis or trans. So just like something to keep in mind, just like get tested regularly, you know, depending on how often you're having sex, what body parts you're using and what you're doing every 6 months, every 3 months, every year.
So can we actually go into that? How does the conversation on STI prevention apply to different kinds of people? So maybe we could just list off types of people. So how about folks who only engage in oral sex? How often should they be getting tested?
Okay, so the thing about that is because STIs, like things like gonorrhea, chlamydia, mycoplasma, not syphilis or herpes, they're site specific, right? So the infection is hanging out and present in whatever body part that you're using. So like if you're engaging in oral sex without condoms, which like, let's be real, who is having oral sex without condoms?
And people would make fun of me.
Exactly. You used to. Not to say that there's any shame in it. Not to say that there's any shame in it. Like, you know, if you want to be as safe as you could be, that's what you're going to do. But it doesn't work for everybody. So it's important to know that, like, if you have a sore throat, it could be gonorrhea. So you might want to get that throat swabbed at the doctor. You know, there are tons of people who, like, for example, like there are tons of like bottoms, right? That only bottom, like only engage in like receptive sex or like receptive anal sex, and they go to the doctor and they pee in a cup and nothing is positive. And it's like, well, you're not using your dick for anything, so how's it going to pick it up? You better get that Q-tip in that ass.
Okay.
That is a quote.
So oral sex only folks, get the throat swab, bottoms, Q-tip in that ass.
Yes, for sure.
Cool.
Whatever parts you're using is what you want to make sure that you're testing.
Okay.
Because it can go in any direction, whether it's like oral to anal contact, oral to vaginal contact, mm-hmm. oral to penis contact. Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference in the frequency of how often you should be getting tested?
I mean, it really depends on like, so if you're like super active, you would want to, I think.
Is super active?
Oh my God. I mean, like it's going to be different depending on like, okay, I can only speak on my own experience. I get tested every 3 months. Uh-huh. I have sex like, and depending on like which doctor I'm talking to, some of them are like trying to counsel me through it. I'm like, relax, like it's not that serious.
Listen, you're having too much sex.
I might have sex like in the 3 month period. I might have like 15 to 20 different partners. Mm-hmm. So I make sure to go at least every 3 months.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, if you're having sex with that many people, you should be going every 3 months. If you're having sex with like 4 or 5 people, you know, maybe you want to go every 6 months. If you're in a monogamous relationship, a mutually monogamous relationship. I know a lot of people in semi-monogamous relationships are not talking about that. That maybe you should get tested every 3 months. But if you are in a mutually monogamous relationship, just like once a year, just to kind of, you know, keep it, make sure everybody's safe and communication is open and you could talk about that kind of a thing.
How about folks who engage in like full service sex work?
Well, again, depending on like what they're doing, like if they're using condoms, if you're using condoms consistently, like you don't really need to get tested more than once every 6 months, once a year. If you're having a lot of sex without condoms, then you might want to get tested every 3 months. And if it's your, you know, your way of making a living and you're doing it every day, then every 3 months might be a good, you know, sort of schedule to follow.
Can you get tested too often?
Let me tell y'all, because I used to test people for HIV, and we would have those people like, oh, I got head from a hooker, and I've been tested 88 days and the window period is 90 days, and then they come in and get tested like every 3 weeks, and it's like, there's something else going on here. Maybe we need to refer you to like some type of counseling that is not inclusive of STI testing. So too often, like there might be something else going on that like the test like is a way to help you like cope or like relieve your anxiety. So that does happen. I think when it comes to testing too often, you want to think about it is where are you getting your test from, right? So like, yes, it's really good to make sure that we're getting tested, and it's important that we have community services in place that can offer that for free or low cost. But if you have the means, or if you have insurance and you have like a primary care doctor and you have the means to get tested through your doctor, it's essentially a waste of resources for you to use things like free testing, because like those, that's literally there for people who need it the most. And again, like if you don't have a lot of risk and you're accessing a service like that, then again, you're wasting a resource, because agencies continue to get funded based on the fact that they do find positives, because that means they're doing their jobs the way that they're supposed to do. So yeah, there it is possible to get tested too often. I think every 3 months is like enough.
So you did talk about area-specific infections. Yeah. And I wanted to know about this nonsense that everyone has herpes.
Oh, like 80% of people have oral herpes. That's real. That's not nonsense. 80% of people, 80% of people have HSV-1. Anytime anybody's ever had a cold sore, there's no such thing as just a cold sore. Like, sure, it's just a cold sore, but it is herpes. Like, we don't need to stigmatize it. Like, there's no way that, like, everybody in this room may have been exposed to herpes at some point. Herpes is a tricky virus, right? It's like HPV or HCV. Your body could totally clear it without any treatment, without you having any outbreaks, without you potentially transmitting it. Like, it just kind of works different in everybody's body. There's no like real exact science for it. But it's super common. And like, yeah, 80% of people in the United States, and this was like, I think that statistic was like a couple years old, so it could be more at this 100%
point. 100% of all of us.
100. We all got it.
Is a cold sore the tall tale sign of HSV-1?
Yeah. Herpes simplex virus 1. Yeah. I mean, one is the one that is oral. Like, it's the same virus. Mm-hmm. It's just like they call oral herpes 1. They call genital herpes 2. And a cold sore. Yeah, a cold sore is always herpes simplex virus. It's like just like the virus way of like shedding and like showing you that it's there. The good thing about herpes is that it doesn't cause any health problems at all. It only causes like painful blisters. And it is like heavily stigmatized. So a lot of people can be like embarrassed by the fact that they have it, but it does not cause, like, whereas something like gonorrhea or chlamydia, if left untreated, causes like all types of problems. Herpes doesn't. The only thing I will say about it though is it does increase HIV transmission risk. Because you have, how science are y'all trying to get right now?
Let's get real science.
Okay. So your HIV targets like CD4 cells, T cells, or like white blood cells. Those are like all sort of the same thing, right?
The immune system cells.
Yeah, the cells that like control your immune system. And like when you get something like herpes, there are these things called CD4 lymphocytes that like kind of like direct themselves into the herpes blister to kind of like, because they're trying to work to like get the outbreak under control. And basically like HIV doesn't need to go that far into the bloodstream to like get into where it needs to go and start like making, like reproducing itself, because that's kind of how the virus works. So it just makes transmission a lot easier, whether it's you're acquiring it or you're passing it on to someone. That also goes for syphilis. Like if there's a syphilis sore, those have lymphocytes in them as well. And then like if anybody has gonorrhea or chlamydia, again, like wherever the infection is at, those CD4 cells are hanging out in there because they're trying to get that infection under control. So again, like the HIV doesn't really have a lot to do to get to where it needs to go. And the other thing I will say about that is just like the relationship between STIs and HIV is if someone living with HIV acquires an STI, it means that the viral levels in their body fluids are higher than normal, because they're just going to secrete more virus at like those different parts of their body, the parts that they're using for sex, essentially.
So more viral means they're more infectious or more likely
More virus means that, yeah, they're more likely to transmit their virus.
So what are some common modes of STI transmission in the LGBTQ community?
I mean, what are y'all doing? What y'all been doing? That could be a rhetorical. That could be a rhetorical question. I mean, really everything. You know, anal sex, oral sex, whether, like I said before, oral to anal, rimming, oral to vaginal.
What about sharing toys?
Sharing toys
partners?
For sure. Yeah. I actually back in the day tested a couple, both cis women, and they were only with each other, or they had gotten together like kind of quickly. And I guess one of them going into the relationship had an STI, and they got it just from like touching themselves and touching their partner. So yeah, I mean, like, it's just once the fluid like gets into where it needs to go, it can just kind of start a new infection, basically.
Once the mucous membranes touch.
Exactly.
What are some common symptoms of STIs?
Okay, so like if you have a penis and it's dripping, go see somebody.
Dripping what exactly? Because penises can drip many things.
I mean, like if you know it's not coming, you know it's not pee. If it hurts when it's coming out, if it's thick and like yellowish, it's gonorrhea. If it's white and watery, it is chlamydia. If it's in the throat, it's going to be a sore throat and lots of phlegm.
How long?
Symptoms. I mean, symptoms usually start if it's in the throat or in the penis. It's going to start within like a week usually. If it's in a vagina or anus, you might not notice it for like several months. That's why it's important to get tested every 3 months to prevent, because the symptoms in a vagina or an anus won't really feel as severe. Like it might be like a little itchy every once in a while. But like the discharge, you're not going to notice the discharge really in the same way most of the time, which is why it's just like important to get tested regularly if you're active. I know I said that like 8 times. I'm going to probably keep saying it.
I mean,
but it's so important.
Hammer it home. What are some methods of STI prevention?
Definitely barriers. Condoms work. Other
Do
sort
they?
Of...
Do they? Folks are always like, there's that 0.9.
If you're using them properly, they're going to work. And
what is proper use versus improper use?
Okay. So like, just like making sure it's put on correctly, make sure like you're like pinching a tip when you're rolling it down, just to make sure the fluid has a space to go. Use lube. The slogan we always used to use when I was doing like direct prevention was the wetter the better. Lube is going to reduce the friction. It's going to reduce the likelihood of the condom breaking, and it's just going to feel good as well. And, you know, I mean, like, there, as far as preventing STIs, like, we don't have any medicine that can prevent STIs. It's really just, like, conversations with your partners about, like, when your last test was, reminding yourself that your last test results are sort of only up to date as the last person that you had sex without a condom with. So every time you have sex without a condom, your test results are no longer really, they don't mean anything anymore because... You don't know now, you know, until you go again. Just like conversations about it, regular testing, barriers, condoms, dental dams, finger condoms, using condoms for sex toys if you're sharing sex toys, things like that. I mean,
dental
like
dams.
Stuff that, yeah, yeah. Did we
shout out to dental
talk about
dams.
That? Yeah, shout out to dental dams. Don't ever put a dental dam on a penis, though. It's got something in it that'll like make it super irritated.
What is it?
I don't know. Okay. Something.
Do you know from personal experience?
That's okay. All I need to know.
Are there certain kinds of sex toys where if you like boil them and wash them, that it's okay to not use a condom?
I mean, yeah, if you are going to boil and wash it, like anything that was on it is not going to survive. Even if it like sits out and sort of dries, it's not going to. That whatever's on it is not going to survive. But like if you're like in the moment, like putting it
dipping
in someone
and
then like putting it in the next person, then that's how transmission is going to happen.
Do not dip and dab.
Yeah, gotcha. Don't dip and dab.
Dipping and dabbing. But the visual that came to mind. So from your consulting and training experience, what are some of the shortcomings of service providers and programs?
Okay, so we talk a lot about sex positivity, but a lot of organizations don't sort of fully operate under like the principles of sex positivity. And it's really evident in the way that they kind of like frame certain behaviors or like even like, you know, you'll get told a lot working. So my experience, I take this back to even my experience in direct service. When I was working in direct prevention, I was a member of the target population that I was like seeking to prevent like HIV and STIs in, right? So I had to like deal with all these weird boundaries because my whole dating pool was like my client pool. And yeah, doesn't that sound rough? Right? And there are all these boundaries that you have to go by because, like, you want to represent, like, who you're working for in a certain way. And you don't want, like, people to sort of see you as, like, someone who's not credible because you're engaging in certain behaviors. But it's like, if we're operating under the principles of sex positivity, like, we shouldn't see that as anything that matters anyway. You know, like, you should be able to do what you want as long as it's not hurting anybody and you're sort of being open and honest about it. That's one thing, I think, sex positivity and just, like, the way that we think about sex outside of the context of conversations with the people that we're working with or serving. That's one issue. Okay, we did the science thing. How disillusioned are y'all trying to get right now?
Real. You've listened to the show before.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
No, I hate society.
Okay, so a lot of community organizations, a lot of non-for-profits, they've sort of figured out that the key to growing their budget expanding is, like, keeping the level of work at, like, this slightly above average quality, right? Because you acquire this funding. If you don't do well, if you don't do, like, a good job with the money that you're given, then nobody's going to give you money again because you fucked it up, right? If you do so good that you actually, like, solve the issue that they're trying to solve, then you can't generate money based on it anymore. So, like, a lot of organizations keep their client populations super dependent on them instead of, like, fostering a sense of, like, independence or, like, getting them to be self-sufficient. Because they know that if they really fix everything that they're intending to fix, that they're not going to be able to throw money at it anymore.
Oh, you meant disillusionment. So, disillusionment.
Yeah, yeah. I don't play about disillusionment. And not every agency is like that. There are incredible agencies that do incredible work and really do right by their clientele. But a lot of like your larger or like your bigger budget than your growing places, that's kind of how they operate.
Can you name names?
No, I'm not going to do that. Girl, come on. I still do independent consulting. Like, I need to make a living.
I need my bag. Woo! Well, thanks for airing that out.
On that, who is it, me?
Sorry, y'all. It's all right.
What are some stigmas you've come across in your consulting or microaggressions that providers put on or put across to their client, their clientele?
I mean, a lot of it, again, is like judgment about sex and sexual behaviors. And, like, just because someone is having sex with a lot of people without condoms doesn't mean that they're doing anything wrong, or, like, doesn't mean that, like, you need to fix their behavior. As long as everybody knows all the facts and the risks associated and are, like, honest with their partners about what they do and, like, what's important to them, I think that's what matters more than just, like, us, like, trying to make people do what we think that they should do because that's how it's been or, like, that's how it works for us. You know, I've done this all over the country. It depends on where you're at. Some places are really cool. Like, DC does a great job. Everybody is, like, really smart and relatable. That a lot of people that work in prevention or care when it comes to HIV and STIs are very smart and relatable. You go to a place like Colorado, it's a little different. You know, people are a little bit more conservative. So it just kind of depends on where you're at, what the political climate is, how accepted certain sexual behaviors are. One thing I will say about the agency I work for in San Francisco, they did a great job, but the culture around sex there is so different from, like, anywhere else in the United States, including here, which is crazy because, like, it's pretty open here, but it is still, there are a lot of different, you know, sort of viewpoints. But yeah, it's just, like, a lot of issues around sex positivity and, like, people just not taking the time to be self-aware and examine, like, what their stuff is that they're projecting onto other people versus, like, what is actually going to help the person that's in front of you or the people that are in front of you.
You've spoken about working in all these different regions of the country. What's a blanket way of people finding a non-stigmatizing provider or doctor?
Oh my God, that is so difficult because you're really never going to know. I mean, there are resources, right? Like, if you look up, like, you know, LGBT friendly or, like, sex positive doctors, you will find lists. I I'm a proponent of like going to see that shitty doctor and like you're going to learn. You know what I mean? Like you're going to learn how to behave. You're going to learn how to treat your patients. It is important for us to be able to advocate for ourselves, right? So like when you look at power dynamics, when you're visiting like a healthcare provider, the doctor is a lot of times seen as like this expert or like the person that like, oh, we should do what they say because like they're the doctor and they know everything. But it really needs to be looked at as like more of a partnership because like we as people are going to be the experts of our own symptoms, our own illness, our own beliefs about treatment, our own beliefs about whatever the illness is. The provider has the medical knowledge and the expertise to kind of help guide us to make like practical decisions, but we can't like operate under this like mentality of like, oh, we have to do what the doctor says. I know it's a lot of for a lot of people, it's really tough to advocate for themselves when they're in like a situation like that with a power dynamic. But you know, that's the only way that they're going to learn.
So what are some tools to advocate for yourself in this situation?
Just like when, you know, someone asks you a question that like makes you uncomfortable or like, you know, is asked in a way that a lot of times, like you'll know what's relevant sort of based on like when someone asks you a question out of curiosity versus like when somebody asks you a question out of like trying to get at information that could potentially help you. You could just say, you know, just say to your doctor, like, oh, I do better with examples, right? Okay. So like, I used to get strep throat all the time and I had my tonsils removed because of this. And I was one time I thought it was gonorrhea because like I'm super thotty and I just know a lot about STIs. So I'm, you know, I'll get tested a lot. So I'm in the doctor and I'm like, oh, and I also just want you to swab my throat for gonorrhea and chlamydia to make sure it's not one of those. And he just looked at me. He was like, are you gay? And I'm like, well, I'm like, first of all, that is not relevant to this conversation. You want to ask me if I could have gotten something in my throat from sexual behavior? Like, that's one thing because that is like sort of like mechanicalizing it, like making it like medical, making it like rooting it in biology. My identity has literally nothing to do with what might be going on in my throat. It ended up just being strep, but it's like, you know, you just find like treat the doctor as you're the customer, okay? And like, I know if people are here in the service industry, I know you hate the phrase, the customer is always right, but like, that's how I want you to think when you go to your doctor. Like the customer, you're the customer and the customer is always right. They're there to help you, not for you to be told what to do.
If your doctor doesn't listen, what, you know, or then, ignores your symptoms.
Yeah, then I would say go, you know, sort of look for like safer resources or lists. But like, I like love to scold people for bad behavior. So
I'm going to call you when I get to my doctor.
Please call me.
To do listen, so, Alex, so we
listen,
just
you can
FaceTime.
Call me. You can FaceTime. You can FaceTime me when you're in the doctor's office. I will be a healthcare proxy. I will be a healthcare advocate.
That's what we got to do.
I love it. It might be a kink. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alex will be back for Q&A in just a moment. All right. Let's go on to our next guest. So we have Janelle and Omotayo from the Ryan Health Network and Sippin' and Spillin'. Janelle and Omotayo are sexual health educators with Ryan Health Network. Ryan Health Network is a network of federally qualified community health centers throughout Manhattan. Their duties consist of HIV testing and sexual education within the community and making PrEP and PEP more accessible to underserved communities. They also co-manage Sippin' and Spillin', a platform for women of color to empower themselves and to take control of their sexual health using topics of HIV and STI prevention. Janelle aspires to be a nurse practitioner, advocating for and serving communities of color and LGBTQIA folks. And Omotayo is currently an MPH candidate at the George Washington University Milken Institute School of Public Health, where she is studying global health policy, centering women and LGBTQ plus community, and hopes to use her education to inform her practice as an OBGYN for folks of trans experience. Welcome,
Janelle.
Folks.
We got to learn a lot about common STIs with Alex. We want to gear this conversation a bit towards HIV. You guys do work primarily in HIV PrEP and PEP, correct?
Yes.
All right. So a bit of information about HIV. What are modes of transmission? What are myths about how you can get HIV?
So there are six different fluids in which you can contract HIV. So they include blood, pre-seminal fluid, seminal fluid, vaginal fluid, rectal fluid, and breast milk. So a lot of people think that you can contract HIV through either urine or saliva. Like when we play, you know, sometimes when we're outside doing outreach and doing the spin wheel and we have little HIV trivia games, a lot of people think that spit or saliva is one of the ways you can contract HIV, but it's not.
And a lot of people aren't familiar with the fact that you can get it through breast milk. So that's why it's important for women who are expecting or people who are expecting to get tested for HIV so that, you know, they can make sure that they take medication to reduce the chance of spreading it to their child, but then also so that they don't breastfeed during pregnancy or after pregnancy.
What are some symptoms of HIV after exposure or infection?
So the first like 2 weeks is what's known after you're infected is known as the acute HIV phase. And so some people have like flu-like symptoms. Not everyone experiences those types of symptoms, you know, like runny nose, coughing, sore throat. Some people have diarrhea, that kind of stuff. But those are symptoms that, you know, are associated with the acute phase. And then after those 2 weeks, it honestly, most people don't experience any symptoms at all. And that can, HIV in that way can like remain undetected or asymptomatic for years and years and years, which is why it's important to get tested because, you know, a lot of people just don't know that they're infected when they are.
So you're saying for 2 weeks, I could think I have the flu or a cold and then that's it?
Right. Which is especially why during, you know, flu season, it's important to, you know, if you have had an exposure or risk of an exposure to know that these are the symptoms of acute HIV and to know that it's a good idea to get tested because what you think could just be the flu or a cold could be HIV in the acute phase.
How do I get tested?
So you can come to Ryan Health.
Plug it.
Shameless plug. But so we have different sites throughout Manhattan. I work at the Lower East Side location. Omatayo is at the Upper West Side location. And we would be, we're pretty much the primary testers at each of our sites. And the test, it's a 20-minute test. It's a rapid test. And all you need is like a finger prick. And while you guys are waiting, because those 20 minutes can feel like all of eternity, honestly, what I started doing sometimes, like I'll play music while I'm sitting and talking with the person. And I just want them to relax because it can be very stressful. And in that 20 minutes, we're asking questions like how many sexual partners have you had? And what is your living situation? A lot of different questions such as that. And then also, a lot of people don't know about dental dams and how you can make them out of condoms. So I was like, oh, you can actually make dental dams out of condoms. Let me show you. So on BuzzFeed. So I don't have a condom now, but you can simply rip the condom.
Okay. You can actually have a... Can you bring scissors also, Paige? Aside from DIYing dental dams, what else do you... How else do you make people comfortable?
And then I also just... we have to do a screening, an H-plus screening, which is just... It's an anonymous one-page questionnaire, and it's asking about, like, it's basically assessing someone's risk. Mm-hmm. So like, how many partners have you had, when was the last time that you were sexually active, and questions such as that. And then also, it's a great, honestly, testing is a great segue into PrEP and PEP. Mm-hmm. Because we also ask, like, did you in the past 72 hours have you had unprotected sex with someone or someone who you, like, you didn't know their HIV status. So if the person says yes and then they're not already on PrEP, they might need to get on PEP. Mm-hmm. So it's a great segue. And honestly, I just talk a lot and I'll start rambling. And then by the time the test is ready,
did you see Scandal last
done.
Night?
Yeah.
Cool. So as you make that, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say,
well,
so
I'm gonna step by step so that people know how they can.
Oh,
do
it. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm supposed to make sure that you look at the expiration date. I think up here it expires in 2022. So we're good. So also before you tear it open, you want to make sure that you move the condom to the side, because if you rip it, then you're pretty much defeating the purpose. So then you take the condom out. And so now I have the tip of the condom. So I'm going to cut the tip of the condom off. Okay. So now I cut the tip of the condom off. So as you can see, like, there's a hole here. Mm-hmm. So then all you have to do is cut across. It's really has a lot of lube.
Lube-ass condom.
Do we rinse lube. The lube off?
No.
Okay.
We love lube. You don't want to go down a dry water slide. That's what I always tell people.
That's Alex is laughing at your question. He's like, bitch.
Alex said the wet.
You don't use lube? Yes.
We talked about how I don't like lube in my mouth, you know, so.
Well, that's why you can use the flavor condoms because they have strawberry and banana, all those flavors. So now I just made a dental dam and it's, a dental dam is just a barrier between your mouth and your partner's genitals.
And this one is penis safe.
Yeah.
So, yay.
Now you have a dental dam.
Yay for peens. So Janelle, you know, mentioned coming to Ryan Health, which is great. But, you know, if you don't want to come to Ryan Health because you don't live in Manhattan or, you know, you live anywhere else in the country or whatever, you can always go to your, you know, local Department of Health and they should have resources that, you know, give you places that you can go to get free or low cost testing. You can also get an HIV test at your primary healthcare provider if you have one. So, yeah.
And in that next step, so let's say the person gets a positive diagnosis for mm-hmm. HIV, what's next?
So the next thing is depending on what test was done. So normally, you know, you don't think you have HIV, you come in, you're like, oh yeah, sure, I'll take this rapid test. After we do the rapid test, we do a confirmatory test just to make sure, you know, to confirm the result, like, is it actually positive? Because sometimes we do get some false positives.
How often is that?
It's not very, I recently had one like this week. So, I mean, that was, no, the woman, the patient was very grateful. She was like, yay, I don't have it.
It's very important if someone is positive, we make sure not to say, I'm sorry to, yeah. You know, you don't want to make it sound like a tragedy because this isn't the 1980s.
Right.
As long as someone takes their medications, their antiretroviral medications, then they can live a normal, productive life. So right. It's just important to say your results, like you were, you know, like you were reactive and now we're going to whatever the next step are going to be.
Yeah. So yeah, we call that first positive a preliminary positive, and then we confirm the result whether it's actually positive. And then after that, the patient would go see a medical provider if, you know, they're willing and ready to start antiretroviral therapy, which is, you know, basically HIV treatment, then they can start then. In the 90s, it was like taking multiple pills at different times a day. It was like really confusing. Today, most HIV treatment regimens are just a single pill that might have two or three medications in it. And it's, you know, a pill that you take once a day, like birth control or a vitamin, any other type of pill. And then you have to come back periodically for monitoring and labs just to make sure your virus is undetectable or, you know, to see if you have any other STIs, that kind of thing.
Is there side effects to the antiretroviral?
Yeah, there are some side effects. You know, a lot, it's, you know, this is a medication that you're going to be on lifelong. So your providers are always checking to see if there are any problems with your renal function or your kidney function. And, you know, there's, in the past, there used to be some bone density implications. A lot of the newer regimens don't really affect that. So they're constantly changing the regimens to make them more safe since people will be on them for a long time. But, I mean, the side effects are as, you know, chronic or as any other, like, long-term medication.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important to make sure that you continuously are going to your provider and that you feel comfortable enough to tell them if you are having side effects or if something just isn't right. Like, just always, you know, make sure that you're communicating that because then they can go through other options.
And how does this all play out in terms of having sex with partners?
What, you mean, like, in terms of being positive?
Yeah.
Okay. So people who have HIV can have fulfilling sex lives because as long as you're taking HIV treatment then and you get your virus to a manageable level of undetectable, which means that the level of virus in your body cannot be detected by any laboratory tests, then that means you won't be able to spread the virus to your partners. And so I think for a lot of people living with HIV, that gives them sort of peace of mind, you know, knowing that they're taking care of their health, but then also by taking their you know, medication, they're also protecting their partners from, you know, getting the virus. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a great thing to be on HIV treatment. It's, you know, amazing that we've come so far in this epidemic that we have so many tools to, like, fight.
And then, oh, sorry. I was going to say that also for someone who's HIV positive, for their partner, they can take PrEP or pre-exposure prophylaxis. So that's a daily pill that you can take to prevent getting HIV so that they stay negative and their partner stays undetectable. So I don't know if anyone here has heard U equals U, which is undetectable equals untransmittable. So that's what the goal. If you are HIV positive, you want to make sure that you're taking your medication, you're being adherent, it's called. So that your viral levels, like Omotayo was saying, are undetectable. So
if I am someone who is positive and my viral load is undetectable, I can just be out here freeballing, like we just good to go.
Explain what you mean by freeballing.
So engaging in unprotected sex with my partner.
So I mean, to be honest, in all of the studies that they've done, you know, they were testing people who, or they were monitoring people who had HIV, who were not using condoms with their partners who were negative. And basically, the results of these studies, they came to the conclusion that, like, even without using condoms, people who have HIV were not passing on the virus to their negative partners. And in a lot of the studies, the partners were not on PrEP, which was, you know, a very important thing, because that means that, like, even if your partner isn't on PrEP and you are taking care of yourself by taking your medication every day, then you cannot pass on the virus to your partner. Of course, PrEP is an amazing tool. Condoms are amazing tools to protect, you know, negative partners, you know, for them to protect themselves. But, you know, HIV treatment in and of itself is sufficient to protect your partner from getting it from you. Obviously, you know, somebody else can infect your negative partner. But of course, HIV treatment doesn't prevent against other STIs. It only protects
against HIV. So still use condoms.
Right.
Even if your partner, so basically what she's saying, if your partner is HIV positive and they're undetectable and you are HIV negative, still use condoms and use PrEP.
One more question to that point. If I am positive and currently undetectable and my partner is infected by someone else, is there a chance of reinfection for me?
Oh, so there's, I mean, you might be able to be infected with a different strain. So yes. And that can be very complicated because if your negative partner was infected with a strain of HIV that you are resistant, that is resistant to the medication that you are on, that can complicate your own treatment. Does that kind of make sense, everyone? So basically, that's why it's a good idea for everyone to use condoms, although, you know, there's so many barriers to people having access to them, it not feeling right. So, you know, that's why, you know, we encourage people to get on HIV treatment in general.
Couple more questions until we like really get in the guts of PrEP and PEP, because we really want to talk about that. But when does HIV progress into AIDS?
HIV progresses into AIDS. Okay, so AIDS is the syndrome that like HIV, the virus, causes. And AIDS, you become diagnosed with AIDS once you like have like an AIDS defining like
illness,
right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, Kaposi sarcoma, like different types of cancers or
pneumonia.
Like
honestly, most people don't die from AIDS. They die from an AIDS related illness.
Right. Or when your CD4 count is really, really low.
What's that mean?
Like under 200? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is CD4?
So CD4 cells.
Sorry. I don't know what you're talking about.
So your CD4 cells.
I was like, Alex
came
with the rundown.
Right. Alex brought this up earlier. He was talking about your CD4 cells. So they're a type of lymphocyte or white blood cell that protects you. And, you know, HIV attacks those cells. And so when the number of cells are really low in your body, then that's like what HIV does. It attacks your CD4 cells so that you can't protect yourself against other illnesses, which is why, you know, someone that has HIV, if they get the cold, it could be really bad for them.
So it's compromising their immune system.
Exactly.
So think of you can basically think about CD4 cells as like your soldiers, your body's soldiers, and like after a certain point, like when the virus has just taken over, your soldiers are they're becoming less and less.
Is it recommended for folks who are HIV positive to get like flu shots every year and stuff?
I see. Yes.
But I think it depends too. Like
go to your doctor.
Yeah, it depends on the age too.
Yeah.
So yeah, like for older folks, you know, like depending. They're just like more immunocompromised in general. So that's why it's like a doctor specific.
What happens if HIV is left untreated?
Oh, well then it will progress to AIDS.
Because the viral count is just going to keep replicating.
Right. And then your CD4 count's going to keep going down. And then, you know, you might get pneumonia one day and that could be
and not be able to recover.
You. Right.
Is there treatment available if you are uninsured for HIV?
Yes.
So you can come to Ryan Health if you're HIV positive and you need medications. There we have certain grants that are available for that, so that people don't have to pay for the medications and they can receive assistance. And same thing with PrEP or PEP. That's one of our other roles within our job, like to do the HIV testing. And also we're trying to grant access to people that might not have gotten access to PrEP or PEP and they're worried about payment. There are the pharmaceutical company who currently makes Truvada. They have a payment. They have payment assistance. So the person doesn't have to pay anything for the medication. And then if someone's on Medicaid, then it's of no cost to them.
And so, like, going back to, like, paying if you're HIV positive, but like, if you don't live in New York State, like, different states have different drug assistance programs. You know, New York State, we have ADAP that can help people who, you know, have HIV but aren't able to pay for either the cost of the medical visits or the cost of the medications, and that can, like, supplement either existing coverage or cover completely, depending.
Ooh, boy. That is getting good, but I gotta interrupt the conversation as I do weekly. You never know what I'm gonna do. Am I gonna pee? Am I gonna be arguing with Rodeca? I don't know. Actually, this week I'm interrupting the conversation to talk about scents, like what you smell like. So I'm over here getting ready for my dick appointment, right? And I'm shitsing away, I'm spritzing away. And I start thinking about you guys at home and how scents are probably pretty important to your life, maybe. So you might want to have a particular smell for the dig appointment that you're going on tonight, or you might want to have a particular smell for work or for, I don't know, walking around the bar that you're going to tonight because we're hosting Drinksgiving. I don't know, but if scents are important to your life, then you might want to check out Scentbird, which is a luxury perfume subscription service. So I use perfume because I like to smell nice. And I like to use Scentbird.com because it gives me a plethora of options in smelling nice, right? So you actually just go to Scentbird.com and it's basically a monthly subscription service for smaller sizes of your favorite scents. So last time I was on Scentbird.com, I chose some specific things like Juliet Has a Gun, Not a Perfume, Nest Fragrances Indigo, because I was trying to go for like this fall scent. So I picked a couple of options that were different from my normal summery scents. And the reason why I like using Scentbird is because, you know, fall is such a finite season, or you might want to smell different from month to month. Like in December, maybe I want to switch it up with a totally different scent. I can do that as opposed to buying like a huge bottle of perfume for like hundreds of dollars that's just going to sit there month after month when I don't want to smell like that anymore, right? Like I'm polyamorous in love and I'm polyamorous in my sense too. So Scentbird actually has 450 designer brands that you can choose from, so a plethora of options. And you can choose one every month, so that's anywhere from Prada to Gucci to Kate Spade to Nest, so much. You can try exactly what you want, and it is the real deal. It's not like some weird like fart water or anything like that. It's the actual scents just in a small vial, and you can carry it in your bag or whatever. They also have colognes, so if you're trying to smell more musky, you can do that too. It's kind of like a monthly scent adventure. So here's how it works. You choose a perfume and they send you a 30-day supply. That's 120 sprays, so you always smell amazing. You can always leave the house, you spray, and then, you know, when you're about to like meet up with your boo, you spray again, and then after you're done and you're on your walk of shame, you spray one more time so the lady on the bus does not judge you. So that's free shipping at all times. You could skip the department store and all the weird pushy salespeople who want you to smell like the back of a freaking coupon. It's very bad. They're very annoying, but this is not very bad or very annoying. In fact, it's very good, and that's why I
www.scentbird.com. So with this exclusive offer, you'll get 50% off your first month today. That's only $7.50 for your first perfume. That's like the cheapest perfume that you can buy next to that weird shit that smells like sweet pea or whatever. So that's scentbird.com/ho. You can use our code HO, which is HOE, for 50% off your first month. That's scentbird.com/HOE. I'm going to just spray a couple more times before I go. Gotta smell real good for the boys and the girls then. Sign on, smell amazing. Let's get back to the sex education.
So we've talked about prep and pep a lot. If you can give like the definitive explainer about what those two things mean.
Prep, it stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. And so I'll go into that and then I'll go into or maybe you can do PEP. Okay, so PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, also known as Truvada. So it's a daily pill that you can take to prevent getting HIV. We both like to use the analogy of PrEP, like think of like birth control. You have to take it every day for it to work. You can't just take it when you want to or think like, I'm gonna take it right before I have sex so that I'm protected. And also, always use PrEP along with condoms because, like Omotayo already said, it's only protecting against HIV. It's not protecting against other STIs. Also, for women, it takes PrEP about 21 days, so 3 weeks, for it to build up in the vaginal tissue. So don't think that you're taking PrEP, you've only been taking it for a few days, and now you're totally protected. It needs to build up in your system. I also like to think of it as, like, when it's cold outside, we still have our winter jackets, but in order for us to stay really warm, we might want to put on long johns or other forms of layers so that our body is it's just another form of protection, another form of, in that case, warmth. But yeah.
Okay. And then PEP stands for post-exposure prophylaxis. It's two pills that you take for 28 days to protect you from HIV after you've been exposed. So we kind of think of it as the morning after pill or like plan B, but for HIV. And you have up to 72 hours after you've been exposed to HIV to access PEP. And you can get that from like an urgent care center, the emergency room, or your primary healthcare doctor. But it's not available over the counter like regular plan B is.
And is that for, so you say it's after exposure to the HIV virus, but what about someone who might have accidentally had unprotected sex or like been sexually assaulted who doesn't know whether or not that person.
Exactly. Right. So potential exposure.
Exposure, right.
So, yes.
So who needs PrEP? Who should be taking PrEP?
So I say anyone can take PrEP. Before, there was a lot of misconceptions about PrEP only being, it's the ideal candidate is a man who is having sex with men. But now it's available to everyone. I don't know if you guys have seen the commercials on TV for Truvada. If you notice, they have like, you know, a little bit of everybody. So because when it first came out, there was that misconception. But as long as if you're sexually active, and say if you're having sex with multiple partners and you want an extra form of protection, sometimes you might not use condoms. It would be good for you to get on PrEP.
Yeah, I agree with Janelle. I feel like in general, PrEP is for anyone who is worried about getting HIV or thinks that they can, which if you're having sex, you probably can get HIV, right? Especially if you're having unprotected sex, condomless sex, if you're worried about unintended pregnancy, you're also someone who is at risk for HIV. So I think it is available for everyone, and everyone should, you know, try to decide for themselves whether it's something that they think that they need.
Are there side effects?
Yeah, so there are two kind of like groups of side effects. There are like the short-term, not like bothersome side effects, and then the like long-term, more serious side effects. So the short-term side effects are, you know, like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Some people say like weight loss, you know, just like GI problems. And those kind of last about a week or two. They shouldn't last much longer. PrEP or PEP, they don't have to be taken with food, but people say that, you know, if you take it with food, it helps to kind of like mitigate some of those side effects. And then the long-term, more serious side effects are like a decrease in bone density and a decrease in creatinine clearance, which is like a measure of kidney function. But those are side effects that we worry about for people who are like really old or really young, which is part of the reason why PrEP is not FDA approved for people under the age of 18, because, you know, they're in that growing phase. So we don't want to like mess with their bone density too much. But, you know, providers, there are providers who are, you know, willing to prescribe PrEP to people for off-label use if they're under the age of 18. So if you're someone who's, you know, under 18, or you know someone who's under 18 that, you know, should probably be accessing PrEP, there are providers out there that, you know, can prescribe off-label for them.
And how effective are both PrEP and PEP?
They're over...
It's over 95% effective.
Right.
Yeah. So.
It's pretty good numbers.
High numbers.
Just to reiterate, PrEP is taken daily, but PEP, how long are we taking PEP for?
You're taking it for 28 days.
Right. Daily as well, but daily, for 28 days.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. And then after the 28 days, I'm assuming you recommend getting tested.
Yeah,
you
getting get tested.
You come back, and then we can talk about transition into PrEP, depending on what your situation was for getting on PEP.
This is something that I want you guys to clear up. So when you're getting tested for HIV, you should go and get tested again, even if you have a negative result,
right?
Like after 3 months. Can you explain that?
So there's like a window period. So the window period is the amount of time from like when you have been infected to when the test will tell you that you've been infected. And that's because the test doesn't look, not all the tests in general, like look for the virus. They look for antibodies. Now we have a new generation of testing for HIV called fourth generation testing. It looks for the virus and also the antibodies. So that's why this test, the window period is shorter. It's about like 10 to 14 days. So
which is really sensitive,
which is really, you know, sensitive, but, so that's why it's a good idea to like get tested. A lot of people, like, they'll come in, they'll say, I had unprotected sex yesterday. I need to get tested. And, you know, I'm cautious to tell them, okay, well, the window period's like 10 to 14 days. So this is telling you about your exposure from 10 to 14 days ago. This isn't telling you about what happened last night. So you need to come back, you know, in 2 weeks to get retested, so we can make sure that you're still negative.
And can you guys speak a little bit about, because I know Ryan Health specifically targets women of color and LGBTQIA folks. What are the rates of STIs and HIV in those populations versus like at all?
Okay. So the lifetime risk of HIV infection for black women is 1 in 54. And like for cisgender black women. And as a comparison, the lifetime risk of HIV infection for cisgender white women is like 1 in 941, which means that cisgender black women are 18 times more likely than cisgender white women to be infected by HIV.
And then with trans black women, the rates are, the lifetime risk of getting HIV is 1 in 2.
And it's the same thing for black MSM too. So, you know, you can see that, you know, black MSM, black trans women, cisgender black women are affected by HIV disproportionately, like in comparison to their white counterparts. And which is why, you know, Ryan Health is like so focused on, you know, making sure that these communities know that they have access to, you know, these types of forms of prevention.
Sometimes when we, like, it's good that both you and Alex have spoken about the fact that, you know, HIV is like not a death sentence, but I think when people speak about it, it's still kind of like scary. Mm-hmm. Like in my mind, I think of like watching those things in like fifth grade over and over again, like, don't get AIDS, don't get. So there's like stigma associated with it. And I think that maybe you can speak to this. Does that prevent people from even wanting to get tested in the first place?
Yeah, I think that's a really big reason why a lot of people, and it's something that's like so stressful for me, because the first question that I ask someone when they come in for an HIV test, I'm always like, oh, is this routine or is there a reason why you wanted to get tested today? You know, a lot of times people say, oh yeah, it's routine, I'm coming in for my like every 3 month situation. But a lot of people also say like, oh well, you know, I had a scare a month ago and I don't know, like I was just so worried I didn't come in. And that's stressful for me because, like, number one, if you came in like within the 72 hour mark, you probably could have gotten PEP, you know? And then you wouldn't have had the stress in the first place. But then, you know, also you waited so long, you might have been having sex with other people, you could have potentially been infecting others. And those first 2 weeks when, you know, you have been infected, when you're in that acute HIV phase, that's the phase when you're the most infectious, when you have the most viral copies. The virus is just dividing and dividing and dividing in your body. And so it's so much easier for you to pass it on to others. So that's why it's really important for people to like get tested. And it's hard, right? Because, you know, people don't want to go because they don't want to get bad news. But, you know, we just try to spin it as like, this is something that you're doing to take care of your sexual health. Like, you need to empower yourself. Kind of like what Alex said, like, you know, you're the customer, like, you need to advocate for yourself.
And also, piggybacking on what Omatayo said, like, we're both human. We understand that people, you know, ignorance is bliss, and some people want to put things off. Potentially want to go into the doctors and hear bad news. So we understand why someone would be cautious or hesitant to go get tested. But we still, you know, we're urging people to get tested, because the sooner you, if depending on what the results are, the sooner you find out, the better. So don't put it off.
And I think like the biggest thing to sort of like, you know, help people, you know, reduce the stress around testing in general is this idea of status neutral prevention that I think New York is kind of doing, you know, like at, they're at the forefront of this, you know, treating people for HIV and also like getting people on PrEP and, you know, not kind of like, you know, treating people who have HIV worse than people who are negative, but trying to access PrEP and just trying to like encourage everyone in like whatever way they can to prevent HIV, whether that's like preventing you from spreading it to others or preventing yourself from getting it, just making sure that everyone has the tools necessary to, you know, do that. And yeah.
And also New York City, they have the End the Epidemic 2020 campaign going on. So currently there's three ways that they're trying to end the epidemic. The first is through everyone getting tested, because then you can find out about your status. Like, that's the first step. The second is if you are in fact HIV positive, to get you linked to care. And that can be done at Ryan Health. We pretty much have everyone there. Like, if someone was to come in and they were positive, they can instantly that day, they can see someone and get the help that they need. So we want to make sure that happens. And then the third way is to get people on PrEP to prevent you from getting HIV.
That's great, guys. Yes. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much. Are we going to invite Alex back up here for Q&A? Alex, come on.
So we're going to open up the floor to questions if anyone has any questions.
This is just a quick like terminology question. You use the term MSM. Is that what you said? What is that?
So MSM stands for men who have sex with men. It's a public health term. And it's being used because, you know, not everyone who identifies as a man also identifies, you know, with being queer or gay or bi. You know, people have different behaviors, and their behaviors don't always like link up to like what they identify as. So
my question is more of a national question. So I think that there's this commonly held belief that people who are having sex with people who don't have penises, or like people who don't have penises having sex with people who also don't have penises, don't have to do a lot of the heavy protection when it comes to sexual health. And I'm definitely one of those people. Even though I objectively know that's not true, besides dental dams, what can people be using to protect themselves when they're having sex?
To be fair, people who don't have penises, like when we're speaking about HIV specifically, it's actually really hard for people who don't have penises engaging in sex with other people who don't have penises to transmit HIV. But, you know, the other STIs, gonorrhea, chlamydia, all the other ones that Alex talked about are fair game, which is why it is important to use, you know, barrier methods when engaging in sex, and just make sure your toys are clean. And any other?
And also some toys are porous. Right. So, you know, make sure that you know what kind of material your toy is, because then if it's not being properly cleaned, you don't want to necessarily spread.
Right. And some things like can't really be cleaned all the way. Like, for example, I use the shock rubs, if anyone knows what those are. Like,
what are those?
They're like the like dildos made of like gems.
Rose quartz.
I have like a rose quartz one. Right. Yeah. Like, those are porous, and I don't share those with partners because I don't want to put condoms on them, because then it's like, what's the point? But like, but you know, if you did want to share that with a partner, it would be a good idea to use a condom on it because they are porous and like no amount of cleaning really can get that thing clean. So, yeah.
And like, if there are no dental dams around, you can use like other household items. Like you can turn a condom into one. We just saw that. Like Saran Wrap works just as good. You know,
latex, so
just
gloves, like, do those work?
Yeah. I mean, if you were kind of, I mean, like,
it's kind of thick.
So if you could like cut it in half, like, and do like what we sort of did with the condom, but sure. Yeah. Any barrier that's like, you're going to be fine with like putting your mouth on.
Yeah. You but know? Like non-porous though. Cause yes. You obviously don't want to use like a pillowcase.
Right. No. Yeah, no.
I was just thinking about the bedroom.
No cotton, no paper towels.
Right.
Plastic, you know, things like that. Polyurethane.
So you mentioned that the high rates of HIV in Black cis women and trans women. Do you think that is because we typically have sex with Black cis men? Like, are their rates in correlation to why our rates are so high?
Yeah. So, okay. So there's a lot of different factors. So, I mean, yes, in general, that's the reason why. So I like attended a talk actually, and they actually said something that I thought was really interesting, but the actual biggest or best predictor of HIV infection is your zip code. And because, you know, if you're living in a zip code that has a high prevalence of HIV, then your likelihood of getting HIV, if you're having sex with your neighbors, increases. And, you know, because communities in general, especially like in New York and other areas, tend to be like stratified by race. And then, you know, on top of that, if you're living in a zip code with a high prevalence and you're only having sex with Black men in this area, then of course, like, you know, Black cisgender and transgender women would be at increased risk. And then also in general, just like, I think it's like over 90% of infections amongst Black men come from Black MSM. So men who are having sex with men, and that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, these men identify as gay or bi or queer. So these men could, you know, potentially have partners that are women. And, you know, that is also another mode of infection, which is why, you know, when we do HIV testing, we ask people, like, who are you having sex with? Like, who are your partners? But then we also ask, like, do you know who your partner's having sex with? Like, who are they having sex with? And a lot of times, you know, people don't know. And that's why, you know, you kind of have to protect yourself as if you're sleeping with every single person that your partner is sleeping with, because that's just the reality of it, right? Like, you're only as protected as you protect yourself against your one partner and as much as they protect themselves against their
partners. I mean, it can sound like we're not necessarily trying to raise suspicion in people, and we're not trying to, at the end of the day, make you think that your partner is cheating on you, but it's just, it's for your peace of mind. Like, you just, you want to make sure it is, but we don't want to make it sound you don't know where your man is, or you don't know where your partner is, so.
Right. There's so much stigma, I think, also just for Black men or men of color about being on the down low, and I think that comes a lot from a lot of internalized homophobia that we have in our communities. I don't know what to say about that, but that's just how I feel.
That's another episode of the
Yeah, I was about to say that.
It's not really a question. It's more like a comment. It was back to what Alex was saying about the organizations and the turnaround, like, clients not really... I don't know how you said it, like...
Or that they're sort of, like, not fostering, like, a sense of independence or, like, getting them to a place where they can kind of meet their own needs themselves without assistance.
Yeah, I had that experience. So when you said that, I felt that on a personal level because I was one of the people that had to, like, tell clients, like, you know, go to this sex workshop. It had a bad turnaround. So I just want to say, like, it's really true because when you want to name the organizations, I know we can't do that, but... It's true.
I mean, you can. No.
I'm not trying to. Alex is like, I'm trying to keep my job. These jobs. He's like, you're not going to mess with my job.
I do think it is a flaw. Like, there is no, like, one, there aren't, like, necessarily specific organizations. It's just sort of a flaw of public health and service in general. And, like, every industry, everything has an industrial complex, including non-for-profits. Like, any industry, like our phones don't work forever. Why do you think that is? You think they can't do that? They can. But, you know, they want you to buy more. You know, it's just kind of how money flows. Right. Everything, every industry is a participant in capitalism.
Hi, I'm Tamika. Hi, Alex. I just want to piggyback on something you said. You can contract a STI with a condom. I did take a sex class, and it was they were giving out condoms at that time that was coated with something that actually helps prevent you from contacting any STIs. And I just wanted to put that out there in that class. They were actually just letting it know it's something that's currently approved by the FDA that would be on the market soon, because that is a issue in the communities that people think they are protected with a condom when you can still get a STI with a condom. Just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, I mean, like, condoms are not 100% effective every time. I mean, things happen, they break, they have holes in them. Like, you know, they don't intend to, they're expired. So it's like always super important to like check and make sure. There's also stuff that we know that can be transmitted just from skin to skin contact, like herpes, HPV, like we talked about before. But for sure, are you talking about the color? Does it change color? Yeah. I've heard of that. There's been a lot of buzz of that for a while. Yeah. There's been a lot of buzz about that for a while. I mean, like, I think it's an interesting thing to think about that, because, like, do you stop when you see it change color? Like, what, you know, what do you do with it then? You know what I mean? I don't know. But yeah, but thank you
that
for bringing
that
up.
That can kind of be an unsafe space to navigate, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's changing. It's kind of weird.
Exactly.
Any other questions? Cool. If we could leave it on maybe like last bit of it. Was that a question? Oh, all right. Don't move your hands. Last bit of advice for folks to navigate their own sexual health practices, in y'all's opinion.
How do you be safe and hoe at the same time?
Yes.
We have a solution for that. That's okay. So as we were saying before, we know what the stats are for cis and trans Black women, and obviously, like Omotai was saying, it's disproportionate to that of white women. So what we did at Ryan Health, both of us are in charge of an event called Sippin' and Spillin'. So Sippin' and Spillin'. So it's for sipping wine and spilling tea on HIV, because we're trying to end HIV. So we have different events, and actually Sam moderated our last event. It was called Uncuffing Season, and we were actually talking about, you know, you might have multiple partners, and this took place in the summer. As we know, the summer is the opposite of cuffing season. You could have multiple sex partners. You could be out here, you know, living your life, live your best life, and we're okay with that. But use protection, like use condoms. Know that you can use PrEP to prevent you from getting HIV. Have your fun, but also be safe and do that. And so you can follow us at Sippin' and Spillin'. There's no space in between Sippin' and Spillin' on Instagram. And we also have Facebook at This Is Sippin' and Spillin'. And because we're going to be having different events, we also have on our Instagram, we have Testing Tuesdays, where we'll highlight different things about STI testing and Women Prep Wednesday. Because there, throughout the country, there are a lot of different organizations that are that have campaigns for PrEP and PEP awareness. And then on Thursdays, we have Thoughtful Thursdays, and we just like to leave people with some kind of motivational quote. And so, yeah, check us out.
I just want to just like speak for a second about stigma, and just like just HIV, mostly about HIV stigma, but also just kind of how it relates to like stigmatized behaviors related to HIV. It's important to think of someone's HIV status, especially if they're positive, as kind of an aspect of their cultural identity, because they can experience so much stigma and discrimination based on that. And it can affect like their life in a lot more ways, just like sort of any intersection of identities can. So it's important to like really examine our own judgments about it. Examine the type of language that we use when we're describing certain things to make sure like we're taking the judgment out of it. And that ultimately will just kind of help people feel a lot more comfortable to be open and honest about their status with their partners, which is something that is, again, like going to prevent transmission. And like, just again, like in thinking about sex positivity, no behavior, as long as it's as long as the person that's engaging in it has all the information and that the person that they're engaging in the act with has all of the information, no behavior is should be like considered as unacceptable or shameful or as like, you know, this is bad because it's a public health risk. It may be a public health risk, but like you can't stop two consenting people from doing something that they enjoy and you shouldn't want to.
Kind of like what Alex said earlier, be your biggest advocate. Make sure, you know, when you're going to the doctor, you're speaking about all your types of sexual behaviors, because what you, you know, you might not think that you need to get your throat swabbed, but in actuality, if you're, you know, giving head, you might need to if you're not using a condom. So yeah, just go to your doctor, make sure you're talking about all your behaviors. And I think it is important to find a doctor that is actually, you know, sex positive. It's hard, but you know, there are resources out there, you know, looking up LGBT providers tend to be more sex positive than, you know, non-LGBT health providers. And that's just from experience. So yeah, just look for those types of providers and flourish, hoes.
Thanks, y'all. Personal social medias for people to follow you?
Oh, at Momo, M-O-M-O, underscore baloney, like Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Expecting that. Why not?
Mine is J-Era, so J-A-Y underscore E-R-A-H-H.
I don't want to be misleading that I like post info or like, you know,
no, productive really good selfies, things, honestly.
But yeah, selfies and like funny memes sometimes.
All the time.
It's just Alex Demo at A-L-E-X-D-E-M-O. Yeah.
Cool one.
Well, you guys can follow us at Inaho Uprising. Mm-hmm. Without the G on Twitter, Inaho Uprising on Instagram. And where else are we?
Facebook, but nobody uses that anymore.
You guys can follow me at Hey Akua Girl. That's HeyAkuaGirl on Instagram and Twitter.
Slam Rid on Instagram and Twitter. Fuck Snapchat. We don't use that shit anymore. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you guys so much.